Roger worked his fiddle, but out of the corner of his eye, he was watching Abram, Jason's burly apprentice. Jason usually had one of his apprentices watching Roger's performances. It made him uneasy, knowing that they were watching him for their master, who meant him only ill. But it had been months since the incident in the guildmaster's office, and nothing had ever seemed to come of it. Master Jason had recovered quickly and was soon performing again, raking in accolades at every high society event in Angiers. Roger might have dared to hope the episode was behind them, save that the apprentices came back almost every day. Sometimes it was Abram, the wood demon, lurking in a crowd, and others it was Sally, the rock demon, sipping a drink at the back of a tavern. But however innocuous they might seem, it was no coincidence. Roger ended his performance with a flourish, whipping the bow from his fiddle into the air. He took his time to bow, straightening just in time to catch it. Roger's sharp ears caught the clink of metal coins in the hat as Jacob moved about the crowd with it. Roger couldn't suppress a smile. The old man looked almost spry. He scanned the dispersing crowd as they collected their equipment, but Abram had vanished. Still, they packed up quickly and took a roundabout path to their inn to make sure they could not be easily followed. The sun was soon to set, and the streets were emptying rapidly. Winter was on the wane, but the boardwalk still held patches of ice and snow, and few stayed out unless they had business to attend.
Ah, even without Charles Cut, the rent is paid with days to spare. When the debt's paid, you'll be rich.
We'll be rich. Look at you. What happened to the shuffling and half-blind old man that opened his door to me a few months gone?
Now, it's performing again that's done it. I know I'm not singing or throwing knives, but even passing the hat has gotten my dusty blood pumping like it hasn't in 20 years. Oh, I feel like I could even...
What?
Just, well, I don't know, spin a tale perhaps, or play dim while you throw punchlines my way. Nothing to steal your shine.
Of course! I would have asked, but I felt I was imposing too much already, dragging you all over town to supervise my performances.
Oh, boy. I can't remember the last time I've been so happy.
They were smiling broadly as they turned a corner and walked right into Abram and Sally. Behind them, Jason smiled broadly.
It's good to see you, my friend.
Before he could rise, Sally delivered a heavy kick to his jaw.
Leave him alone!
Jacob threw himself at Sally. The heavy soprano grabbed him and swung him hard against the wall of a building.
Oh, there's plenty for you too, old man.
The wooden planks beneath his hands were spinning, but Roger wrenched himself to his feet, holding his fiddle by the neck with both hands, swinging the makeshift club wildly.
You won't get away with this!
Who will you go to? My uncle has already assured me the city magistrates will turn a deaf ear to your obviously false accusations. If you should even live to tell tales, go to the guard, and it's you they'll hang.
Abram caught the fiddle easily, twisting Roger's arm hard as he drove a knee into his crotch. Roger felt his arm break, even as his groin caught fire, and the fiddle came down hard on the back of his head. Even through the ringing in his ears, Roger heard Jacob's pained grunts. Abram stood over him, smiling, as he lifted a heavy club.
Hey, Giselle!
The old herb gatherer came to Scott with her bowl.
Why not let your apprentice take the task for once?
Scott nodded at Leisha, changing another man's dressing.
If I let her give the rag baths, I'd have half of Angiers crying plague within a week.
Leisha shook her head. Scott was harmless. He was a messenger whose horse had thrown him on the road. Lucky to be alive, especially with two broken arms, he had somehow managed to track down his horse and get back in the saddle. With no wife to care for him, the Messenger's Guild had produced the Clats to put him up in Giselle's hospit until he could do for himself. Giselle soaked her rag in the warm soapy bowl and lifted the man's sheet, her hand moving with firm efficiency.
Just as well I give the baths. We wouldn't want to disappoint poor Leisha.
Well, I think she'd likely find it in a different form than you.
Poor Scott has a shine on you.
A shine?
Katie was one of the younger apprentices.
He's not shining. He's in love.
I think he's cute.
You think everyone is cute. But I hope you have better taste than to fall for a man that begs you for a rag bath.
Don't give her ideas. Ronnie had her way. She'd be rag bathing every man in the hospital.
At least have the decency to blush.
Enough! Off with you giggle boxes! I want a word with Leisha.
Giselle took Leisha into one of the smaller side rooms.
Most every man that comes in here shines on you. It wouldn't kill you to talk to one, apart from asking after his health.
You sound like my mom.
I sound like no such thing. I just don't want you to die an old maid despite her. There's no crime in liking men.
I like men.
Not that I've seen.
So I should have jumped to offer Scott a rag bath?
Certainly not. At least not in front of everyone.
Oh, now you sound like Bruna. It will take more than a few crude comments to win my heart.
Requests like Scott's were nothing new to Leisha. She had her mother's body, and that meant a great deal of male attention, whether she invited it or not.
Then what does it take? What man could pass your heart wards?
A man I can trust. One I can kiss on the cheek without him bragging to his friends the next day that he stuck me behind the barn.
You'll sooner find a friendly Corling.
Maybe you're right.
I think you're scared. You've waited so long to lose your flower that you've taken a simple, natural thing every girl does and built it up into some unscalable wall.
That's ridiculous.
Is it? I've seen you when ladies come asking your advice on bed matters, grasping and guessing as you blush furiously. How can you advise others about their bodies when you don't even know your own?
I'm quite sure I know what goes where.
You know what I mean.
What do you suggest I do about it? Pick some man at random just to get it over with?
If that's what it takes. You've guarded that flower so long that no man will ever be worthy to take it in your eyes. What good is a flower hidden away for no one to see? Who will remember its beauty when it wilts?
Giselle was there in an instant, holding her tightly as she cried.
There, there, Poppet. It's not as bad as all that.
After supper, when the wards were checked, the stripers sent home to their mothers, and the apprentices to their studies, Leisha and Giselle finally had time to brew a pot of herb tea and open the satchel from the morning messenger. A lamp sat on the table, full and trimmed for long use.
Patience all day and letters all night. Thank light herb gatherers don't need sleep, huh?
They quickly separated out correspondence meant for the patients, and then Giselle grabbed a bundle at random, glancing at the hail.
These are yours.
Giselle passed the bundle to Leisha and snatched another letter off the pile, which she opened and began to read.
This one's from Kimber.
Kimber was another of Giselle's apprentices sent abroad, this one to Farmer Stump, a day's ride to the south.
The Cooper's rash has gotten worse and spread again.
Oh, she's brewing the tea wrong, I just know it. She never lets it steep long enough and then wonders at her weak cures. If I have to go to Farmer Stump and brew it for her, I'll give her such a thumping.
She knows it. That's why she wrote to me this time.
Leisha loved Giselle. She could be as hard as Bruna when the occasion demanded, but she was always quick to laugh. Leisha missed Bruna dearly, and the thought turned her back to the bundle. It was fourth day when the weekly messenger arrived from Farmer Stump, Cutter's Hollow, and Point South. Sure enough, the hail of the first letter in the stack was in her father's neat script. There was a letter from Vicka as well, and Leisha read that one first, her hands clenching as always until she was assured that Bruna, older than ancient, was still well.
Vicka's given birth. A boy, Jamie, 6 pounds, 11 ounces.
Is that the third?
Fourth.
Vicka had married child Jonah, now tender Jonah, not long after arriving in Cutter's Hollow, and wasted no time in bearing him children.
Not much chance of her coming back to Angiers, then.
I thought that was given after the first.
It was hard to believe 7 years had passed since she and Vicka exchanged places. The temporary arrangement was proving permanent, which didn't entirely displease Leisha. Regardless of what Leisha did, Vicka would stay in Cutter's Hollow, and seemed better liked there than Bruna, Leisha, and Darcy combined. The thought gave Leisha a sense of freedom she had never dreamt existed. She'd promised to return one day to ensure the Hollow had the gatherer it needed, but the Creator had seen to that for her. Her future was hers to choose. Her father wrote he had caught a chill, but Vicka was tending him, and he expected to recover quickly. The next letter was from Mary. Her eldest daughter already flowered and promised. Mary would likely be a grandmother soon. There were two more letters in the bundle. Leisha corresponded with Mary, Vicka, and her father almost every week, but her mother wrote less often, and oftentimes in a fit of pique.
All well?
Just my mom. The tone changes with her humors, but the message stays the same.
Come home and have children before you grow too old and the Creator takes the chance from you.
Mm-hmm.
Tucked in with Elena's letter was another sheet, supposedly from Jared, though the missive was in her mother's hand, for Jared knew no letters. But whatever pains she took to make it seem dictated, Leisha was sure at least half the words were her mother's alone, and most likely the other half as well. The content, as with her mother's letters, never changed. Jared was well. Jared missed her. Jared was waiting for her. Jared loved her.
My mother must think me very stupid to believe Jared would ever even attempt a poem, much less one that didn't rhyme. What if she's right? Dark as it is to think Elena right about anything, I do want children one day. And you don't need to be an herb gatherer to know that my days to do it are fewer ahead than behind. You said yourself I've wasted my best years.
That was hardly what I said.
It's true enough. Even after Jared and Merrick, I always felt the right man would just come along one day. That I'd see him and know.
We all dream that sometimes, dear. And it's a nice enough fantasy once in a while, when you're staring at the wall. But you can't hang your hopes on it.
Leisha squeezed the letter in her hand, crumpling it a bit.
So you're thinking of going back and marrying this Jared?
Oh, Creator, no! Of course not!
Good. You've saved me the trouble of thumping you on the head.
Much as my belly longs for a child, I'd die a maid before I let Jared give me one. Problem is, he'd have at any other man in the Hollow that tried.
Easily solved. Have children here.
What?
Cutter's Hollow is in good hands with Vicka. I trained the girl myself, and her heart is there now in any event. Stay. Make Angiers your home and take over the hospit when I retire.
Leisha's eyes widened. She opened her mouth, but no sound came out.
You've taught me as much as I've taught you these years. There's no one else I trust to run my business, even if Vicka returned tomorrow.
I don't know what to say.
No rush to say anything. I dare say I don't plan to retire any day soon. Just think on it.
Leisha nodded. Giselle opened her arms, and she fell into them, embracing the older woman tightly.
Help! Help!
They both glanced at the window. It was past dark. Opening one's shutters at night in Angiers was a crime punishable by whipping. But Leisha and Giselle gave it no thought as they threw open the bar, seeing a trio of city guardsmen running down the boardwalk, two of them each carrying another man.
Aye! The hospit! Open your doors! Succor! Succor! Succor and healing!
As one, Leisha and Giselle bolted for the stairs, nearly tumbling down in their haste to get to the door. They made it to the landing and threw open the door, watching as the men approached. The lentils were warded. They and their patients were safe enough, even without the door.
What's happening?
Katie was sticking her head out over the balcony at the top of the stairs.
Put your aprons back on and get down here!
There were wind demons about, drawn to the light and commotion. But the guards were closing the distance fast, and Leisha dared to hope that they would make it unscathed. Until one of the men slipped on a patch of ice and went down hard. The guard with the man over his shoulder put his head down, picking up speed. The unburdened man turned and rushed back to his fallen comrade. Suddenly, the head of the hapless guard flew free of his body, rolling across the boardwalk. Before blood even began to spurt from the wound, the wind demon launched skyward, hauling the dead man's body into the air. The laden guard passed the wards, hauling his charge to safety. Leisha looked back at the remaining man, struggling to rise, and her brow set.
Leisha, no!
She ran in sharp zigzag. One coiling attempted a dive attack anyway, and missed her completely, if only by a few inches. It tumbled into the boardwalk, but quickly righted itself. Leisha spun away, hurling a fistful of Bruno's blinding powder into its eyes.
Save him, not me!
The guard was pointing to the still form lying on the boardwalk. The guard's ankle was at an odd angle, clearly broken. Leisha glanced at the other form, prone on the boardwalk. She could not carry them both.
Not me!
I've a better chance of getting you to safety.
She got under his arm and heaved.
Keep low. Windies are less apt to dive at things low to the ground.
She hunched as much as she could, staggering under the big man's weight, and knew they were not going to make it at the shuffling pace, low or not.
Now!
Leisha looked up to see Katie and the other apprentices run out onto the boardwalk, holding the edges of white sheets above their heads. The fluttering cloth was almost everywhere, making it impossible for the wind demons to pick a target. Under this cover, Mistress Giselle and the first guard came rushing up to them. Giselle helped Leisha as the guard fetched the unconscious man. Fear gave them all strength, and they covered the remaining distance quickly, retreating into the hospital and barring the door.
This one's dead. I'd wager he'd been gone over an hour.
I almost sacrificed myself for a dead man?
Leisha ignored the guard with the broken ankle, moving over to the other injured man. With his round, freckled face and slender form, he seemed more a boy than a man. He had been badly beaten, but he was breathing, and his heart was strong. Leisha inspected him swiftly, cutting away his bright patchwork clothes as she probed for broken bones and searched for the sources of the blood that soaked his motley.
What happened?
We were heading in from last patrol. Found these two, jonglers by their look, lying on the walk. Must have been robbed after a show. They was both alive, but in a bad way. It was dark by then, but neither of them looked like they'd last the night without a gatherer to tend them. I remembered this hospital, and we ran as hard as we could, trying to stay under eaves, out of sight from Wendy's.
You did the right thing.
Yeah. Tell that to poor Johnson. Oh, Creator, what will I tell his wife?
That's a worry for the morrow. Drink this.
What is it?
It will put you to sleep. I need to set your ankle, and I promise you, you don't want to be awake when I do.
The guard nodded and quaffed the potion quickly. Leisha was cleaning out the younger one's wounds when he started awake. One of his eyes was swollen shut, but the other was a bright green and darted about wildly.
Jacob! Where's Jacob? Is he all right?
The elder man who was found with you?
Yes!
Leisha hesitated, picking her words, but the pause was answer enough.
No!
The guard pinned him hard, looking him in the eyes.
Did you see who did this to you?
He's in no condition.
I lost a man tonight. I don't have time to wait. Well?
The boy looked up at him with eyes filling with tears. Finally, he shook his head, but the guard didn't let up.
You must have seen something.
That's enough.
Leisha grabbed the man's wrist, pulling hard. He resisted for a moment and then let go.
Wait in the other room.
Just put me back out into the night. I was meant to die a long time ago. And everyone that tries to save me ends up dead.
Leisha took the crippled hand in hers and looked him in the eye.
I'll take my chances. We survivors have to look out for one another.
She put the flask of sleeping draught to his lips and held his hand, lending him strength until his eyes slipped closed.
To think young Roger was worried he had no way to pay. I've half a mind to pay him to come entertain the patients after he's back on his feet.
The patients and the girls love him.
I've seen you dancing when you think no one is looking.
Leisha smiled. When he wasn't fiddling, Roger spun tales that had the apprentices clustered at the foot of his bed or taught the stripers makeup tricks he claimed came from the Duke's own courtesans. Giselle mothered him constantly, and the apprentices and stripers all shined and doted on him.
An extra thick slice of beef for him, then.
Leisha was cutting the meat and laying it on a platter already overladen with potatoes and fruit.
I don't know where that boy puts it. You and the others have been stuffing him for a full moon and more, and he's still thin as a reed. Lunch!
The girls filtered in to collect the trays. Ronnie moved directly for the overladen one, but Leisha swept it out of reach.
I'll take this one myself.
Roger needs to take a break and eat something, not spin private tales while you girls cut his meat. You can all fawn on him later.
Intermission.
Leisha swept into the room, but she needn't have bothered. Roger smiled and waved, knocking over a wooden cup as he tried to set his fiddle aside. His broken fingers and arm had mended neatly, but his leg casts were still on strings, and he could not easily reach the bedstand.
You must be hungry today.
Leisha set the tray across his lap and took the fiddle. Roger looked at the tray dubiously, smiling up at her.
I don't suppose you could help me cut?
Your fingers seem nimble enough when you work your fiddle. Why are they deficient now?
Well, because I hate eating alone.
Leisha smiled, sitting on the side of the bed and taking the knife and fork. She cut a thick bite of meat, dragging it through the gravy and potatoes before bringing it up to Roger's mouth. He smiled at her and a bit of gravy leaked from his mouth.
I can lift the fork myself.
You want me to just cut up the meat and leave?
No.
Then hush.
It's not my fiddle, you know. It's Jacob's. Mine was broken when we...
Leisha frowned as he trailed off. After more than a month, he still refused to speak of the attack, even when pressed by the guard. He'd sent for his few possessions, but so far as she knew, he hadn't even contacted the Jongleurs Guild to tell them what had happened.
It wasn't your fault. You didn't attack him.
I might as well have.
What do you mean?
I mean, by forcing him from retirement, he'd still be alive if...
You said he told you coming out of retirement was the best thing that had happened to him in 20 years. It sounds like he lived more in that short time than he would have in years spent in that cell in the guild house.
Roger nodded, but his eyes grew wet. Leisha squeezed his hand.
Herb gatherers see death often. No one ever goes to the Creator with all their business complete. We all get a different length of time, but it needs to be enough regardless.
It just seems to come early for the people who cross my path.
I've seen it come early for a great many people who have never heard of Roger Halfgrip. Would you like to shoulder the blame for their deaths as well?
Roger looked at her, and she pressed another forkful into his mouth.
Oh.
It doesn't serve the dead to stop living yourself out of guilt.
Leisha had her hands full of linens when the messenger arrived. She slipped the letter from Vika into her apron and left the rest for later. She finished putting away the laundry, but then a striper ran up to tell her a patient had coughed blood. After that, she had to set a broken arm and give the apprentices their lesson. Before she knew it, the sun had set and the apprentices were all in bed. She turned the wicks down to a dim orange glow and made a last sweep through the rows of beds, making sure the patients were comfortable before she went upstairs for the night. She met Roger's eyes as she passed, and he beckoned, but she smiled and shook her head. She pointed to him, then put her hands together as if praying, leaned her cheek against them, and closed her eyes. Roger frowned, but she winked at him and kept on, knowing he wouldn't follow. His casts had come off, but Roger complained of pain and weakness despite the clean mend. At the end of the room, she took the time to pour herself a cup of water. It was a warm spring night, and the pitcher was damp with condensation. She brushed her hand against her apron absently to dry it, and there was a crinkle of paper. She remembered Vika's letter and pulled it out, breaking the seal with her thumb and tilting the page towards the lamp as she drank. A moment later, she dropped her cup. She clutched the paper tightly and fled the room. Roger found Leisha in the darkened kitchen.
Are you all right?
Roger! Why aren't you in bed?
Roger didn't answer, coming to sit beside her.
Bad news from home?
Leisha looked at him a moment.
That chill my father caught. He seemed to get better, but it came back with a vengeance. Turns out it was a flux that's run from one end of the hollow to the other. Most seem to be pulling through it, but the weaker ones...
Someone you know?
My mentor, Bruna. A few others as well. And two children I never had the chance to meet. Over a dozen in all, and more than half the town still laid up. My father worst amongst them.
I'm sorry.
Don't feel sorry for me. It's my fault.
What?
I should have been there. I haven't been Giselle's apprentice in years. I promised to return to Cutter's Hollow when my studies were done. If I had kept my promise, I would have been there, and perhaps...
I saw the Flux kill some people in Woodsend once. Would you like to add those to your conscience? Or those that die in this very city because you can't tend them all?
That's not the same, and you know it.
Isn't it? You said yourself that it does nothing to serve the dead if you stop living yourself out of guilt.
Leisha looked at him, her eyes round and wet.
So what do you want to do? Spend the night crying, or start packing?
Packing?
I have a messenger's portable circle. We can leave for Cutter's Hollow in the morning.
Roger, you can barely walk.
Roger lifted his cane, set it on the counter, and stood. He walked a bit stiffly, but unaided.
Been faking to keep your bed warm and doting women a bit longer.
I never! I'm just not ready to perform yet.
But you're fit to walk all the way to Cutter's Hollow? It would take a week without a horse.
I doubt I'll need to do any backflips on the way. I can do it.
No, I absolutely forbid it.
I'm not some apprentice you can forbid.
You're my patient, and I'll forbid anything that puts your healing in jeopardy. I'll hire a messenger to take me.
Good luck finding one. The weekly man south will have left today, and at this time of year, most of the others will be booked. It'll cost a fortune to convince one to drop everything and take you to Cutter's Hollow. Besides, I can drive Corlings away with my fiddle. No messenger can offer you that.
I'm sure you could. But what I need is a swift messenger's horse, not a magic fiddle.
With that, Leisha ushered him back to bed, and then went upstairs to pack her things.
So you're sure about this?
I have to go. It's too much for Vika and Darcy to handle alone.
Roger seems to think he's taking you.
Well, he's not. I'm hiring a messenger.
He's been packing his things all morning.
He's barely healed.
It's near 3 moons. I haven't seen him use his cane all morning. I think it's been nothing more than a reason to be around you for some time.
You think that Roger?
I'm just saying, it isn't every day a man comes along who'll brave quarrelings for your sake.
Giselle, I'm old enough to be his mother.
You're only 27, and Roger says he's 20.
Roger says a lot of things that aren't so.
Giselle shrugged again.
You say you're nothing like my mom, but you both find a way to turn every tragedy into a discussion about my love life.
Giselle opened her mouth to reply, but Leisha held up a hand to stay her.
If you'll excuse me, I have a messenger to hire.
Between her father's arrangements and her earnings from Giselle, Leisha was able to acquire a promissory note from the Duke's bank for 150 Milanese sons. It was a sum beyond the dreams of Angerian peasantry, but messengers didn't risk their lives for clats. She'd hoped it would be enough, but Roger's words proved prophetic, or a curse. Spring trade was on in full, and even the worst messengers had assignments. Scott was out of the city, and the secretary at the Messengers Guild flat out refused to help her. The best they could offer was next week's Man South, a full 6 days away.
I could walk there in that time.
Then I suggest you get started.
The clerk stared at her dryly. Leisha bit her tongue and stomped off. She thought she would lose her mind if she had to wait a week to leave. If her father died in that week.
Leisha? It is you!
Merrick came striding up to her with his arms outspread.
I didn't realize you were still in the city.
Shocked, Leisha let him embrace her.
But what are you doing in the guild house?
I need an escort to take me back to Cutter's Hollow. There's a flux sweep in the town and they need my help.
I could take you, I suppose. I'll need to call a favor to cover my run to Riverbridge tomorrow. That should be easy enough.
I have money.
You know I don't take money for escort work. There's only one payment that interests me.
His hand reached around to squeeze her buttock, and Leisha resisted the urge to pull away. She thought of the people that needed her, and more, she thought about what Giselle had said about flowers no one saw. Perhaps it was the Creator's plan that she should meet Merrick this day. She swallowed hard and nodded at him. Merrick swept Leisha into a shadowed alcove off the main hall. He pushed her against the wall behind a wooden statue and kissed her deeply.
I won't have that problem this time.
I could come to your inn before dark. We could spend the night and leave in the morning.
Merrick looked from side to side and shook his head. He pushed her against the wall again, reaching down with one hand to unbuckle his belt.
I've waited for this too long. I'm ready now, and I'm not letting it get away.
I'm not doing it in the hallway. Someone will see.
No one will see.
Merrick produced his stiff member and started pulling up her skirts.
You're here like magic, and this time so am I. What more could you want?
Privacy? A bed? A pair of candles? Anything?
A jongleur singing outside the window? You sound like a virgin.
I am a virgin.
Everyone in Cutter's Hollow knows you stuck that ape Jared a dozen times at least. Are you still lying about it after all this time?
Leisha scowled and drove her knee hard into his crotch. Leisha stormed out of the guild house while Merrick was still on the ground.
No one would take you?
No one I didn't have to bed.
Even now, Leisha worried that she'd made a huge mistake. Part of her wished she had just let Merrick have his way. But even if Giselle was right and her maidenhead wasn't the most precious thing in all the world, it was surely worth more than that. She scrunched up her eyes too late, only serving to squeeze out the tears she sought to prevent. Roger touched her face, and she looked at him. He smiled and reached out, producing a brightly colored handkerchief as if from her ear.
I could still take you. I walked all the way from here to Shepherd's Dale. If I can do that, I can take you to Cutter's Hollow.
Truly? That's not just one of your Jack Scaletongue stories? Like being able to charm Corlins with your fiddle?
Truly.
Why would you do that for me?
We're survivors, aren't we? Someone once told me that survivors have to look out for one another. Am I going mad?
Leisha had purchased a horse for the trip, but Roger had no riding experience, and Leisha a little more. He sat behind her as she guided the beast at a pace barely faster than they could walk. Even then, the horse jarred his stiff legs painfully, but Roger did not complain. If he said anything before they were out of sight of the city, Leisha would make them turn back.
Which is what you should do anyway. You're a jongleur, not a messenger.
But Leisha needed him, and he knew from the first time he saw her that he could never refuse her anything. He knew she saw him as a child, but that would change when he brought her home. She would see there was more to him, that he could take care of himself and her as well. He looked at the road ahead, though, and his gut clenched. Like Cricket Run, Farmer Stump was just a day away on horseback, but Cutter's Hollow was much further, perhaps 4 nights, even with the horse. Roger had never spent more than 2 nights outside, and that just the once. Eric's death flashed in his mind. Could he handle losing Leisha, too?
Are you all right?
What?
Your hands are shaking.
It's nothing. I just felt a chill out of nowhere.
I hate that.
Roger barely heard. He stared at his hands, trying to will them to stillness.
You're an actor! Act brave!
He thought of Marco Rover, the brave explorer, in his stories. Roger had described the man and mummed his adventures so many times. Every trait and mannerism was second nature to him. His back straightened, and his hands ceased to shake.
Let me know when you're getting tired. I'll take over the reins.
I thought you'd never ridden before.
You learn things by doing them.
With Roger at the reins, they made better time. But even so, they barely made it to Farmer's Stump before dusk. They stabled the horse and made their way to the inn.
You jongleur.
Roger Halfgrip, out of Angiers and Points West.
Never heard of you, but the room's free if you put on a show.
Roger looked to Leisha, and when she shrugged and nodded, he smiled, pulling out his bag of marvels. Farmer's Stump was a small cluster of buildings and houses, all connected by warded boardwalks. Unlike any other village Roger had ever been to, the Stumpers went outside at night, walking freely, if hastily, from building to building. The freedom meant a full taproom, which pleased Roger well. He performed for the first time in months, but it felt natural, and he soon had the entire room clapping and laughing at tales of Jack Scaletongue. When he returned to his seat, Leisha's face was a little flushed with wine.
You are wonderful! I knew you would be.
Roger beamed and was about to say something when a pair of men came over, bearing a handful of pitchers. They handed one to Roger and another to Leisha.
Oh, just a thanks for the show. I know it ain't much.
It's wonderful, thank you. Please join us.
What brings you through the stump?
The man was short, with a thick black beard. His companion was taller, burlier, and mute.
But we're heading to Cutter's Hollow. Leisha is an herb gatherer going to help them fight the flux.
Oh, Hollow's a long way. How you last the night?
Don't fear for us. We have a messenger circle.
Oh, portable circle? Well, that must have cost a pretty pile.
More than you know.
Well, now, we won't keep you from your beds. Yeah, you'll want an early start.
The pair of men moved away, going to join a third man at another table as Roger and Leisha finished their drinks and headed to their room.
Look at me! I'm a jongleur!
The man plopped the belled motley cap on his head and pranced around the road. Their third companion, larger than both of them combined, said nothing, but all were smiling.
Ah! I'd like to know what that witch threw at me. Dunked my whole head in the stream. It still feels like my eyes are on fire.
The black-bearded man held up the circle and the reins of the horse, grinning.
Still, an easy take like that only comes along once in a lifetime.
Be months before we need to work again, and not a scratch on us.
Maybe not a scratch on you, but I got a few on my back. That horse was worth nearly as much as the circle. Even if that dust she threw in my eyes made it so I could barely see what went where.
The pair's giant mute companion clapped his hands with a grin.
Should have taken her with us. Gets cold in that miserable cave.
Don't be stupid. We got a horse in a messenger circle now. We don't need to stay in the cave no more, and that's best anyway. Word in the stumps that the Duke's noticing them just leaving the town and getting hit. We go south first thing come morning before we got Rhinebeck's guards on our heel.
The men were so busy with their discussion, they didn't notice the man riding down the road towards them until he was just a dozen yards away. In the waning light, he seemed wraith-like, wrapped in flowing robes and astride a dark horse, moving in the shadow of the trees beside the forest road. When they did take note of him, the mirth on their faces fell away, replaced with looks of challenge. The black-bearded man was squat and thickly set, with thinning hair above his long, unkempt beard. He dropped the portable circle to the ground and pulled a heavy cudgel from the horse, advancing on the stranger. Behind him, the mute raised a club the size of a small tree, and the man in the motley cap brandished a spear, the head nicked and burred.
This here's our road. We're fine to share, like, but, there's tax.
In answer, the stranger stepped his horse from the shadows. A quiver of heavy arrows hung from his saddle, the bow strung in an easy reach. A spear, as long as a lance, rested in a harness on the other side, a rounded shield beside it. Strapped behind his seat, several shorter spears jutted, their points glittering wickedly in the setting sun. But the stranger reached for no weapon, merely letting his hood slip back a bit. The men's eyes widened, and their leader backed away, scooping up the portable circle.
Well now, we might let you pass just this once. We best not see you on this road again.
The stranger rode on, unconcerned. Roger fought his terror as their voices receded. They had told him they would kill him if he tried to rise again. He reached into his secret pocket to take hold of his talisman, but all he found were some broken bits of wood and a clump of yellow-gray hair. It must have broken when the mute kicked him in the gut. He let the remnants fall from his numb fingers into the mud. The sound of Leisha's sobs cut into him, making him afraid to look up. He had made that mistake before, when the giant had gotten off his back to take his turn with Leisha. One of the others had quickly taken his place, using Roger's back as a bench to watch the fun. There was little intelligence in the giant's eyes, but if he lacked the sadism of his companions, his dumb lust was a terror in itself, the urges of an animal in the body of a rock demon. If Roger could have removed the image of him on top of Leisha from his mind by clawing out his eyes, he would not have hesitated. He had been a fool, advertising their path and valuables like that. Too much time spent in the Western Hamlets had dulled his natural city-bred distrust of strangers. Marco Rover wouldn't have trusted them. But that wasn't entirely true. Marco was forever getting tricked or clubbed on the head and left for dead. He survived by keeping his wits afterward.
He survives because it's a story, and you control the ending.
But the image of Marco Rover picking himself up and dusting himself off stuck with him, and eventually, Roger gathered his strength and his nerve, forcing himself to his knees. Pain shot through him, but he did not think they had broken any bones. His left eye was so swollen he could barely see out of it, and he tasted blood in his mouth from his thickened lip. He was covered in bruises, but Abram had done worse. But there were no guardsmen this time to haul him to safety. No mother or master to put themselves in a demon's path. Guilt shook him. He had fought to save her honor, but they had been three, all armed and stronger than him. What could he have done?
I wish they'd killed me. Better dead than to have seen her. Coward! Get up! She needs you!
Roger staggered to his feet, looking around. Leisha was curled up in the dust of the forest road, without even the strength to cover her shame. There was no sign of the bandits. Of course, it hardly mattered. They had taken his portable circle, and without it, he and Leisha were as good as dead. Farmer Stump was almost a full day behind them, and there was nothing ahead on the road for several days' walk. It would be dark in little more than an hour. Roger ran to Leisha's side, falling to his knees beside her.
Leisha! Are you all right? Leisha, please, answer me.
Leisha ignored him, curled up tight, shaking as she wept. Roger stroked her back, subtly tugging her dress back down. Whatever place her mind had retreated to in order to withstand the ordeal, she was reluctant to leave it. He tried to hold her in his arms, but she shoved him violently away, curling right back up. Leaving her side, Roger picked through the dirt, gathering what few things had been left them. The bandits had dug through their bags, taking what they wanted and tossing the rest, mocking and destroying their personal effects. Leisha's clothing lay scattered in the road, and Roger found Eric's brightly colored bag of marbles trampled in the muck. Much of what it had contained was taken or smashed. The painted wooden juggling balls were stuck in the mud, but Roger left them where they lay. Off the road where the mute had kicked it, he spied his fiddle case and dared to hope they might survive. He rushed over to find the case broken open. The fiddle itself was salvageable with a little tuning and some new strings, but the bow was nowhere to be found. Roger looked as long as he dared, but to no avail. It was gone. He put the fiddle back in its case and spread out one of Leisha's long skirts, bundling the few salvageable items within. Roger looked up at the setting sun and realized suddenly, in a way he had not before, that they were going to die.
What does it matter?
He shook his head. They weren't dead yet, and it was possible to avoid Corlings for a night if you kept your wits. He squeezed his fiddle case reassuringly. If they lived through the night, he could cut off a lock of Leisha's hair and make a new bow. The Corlings couldn't hurt them if he had his fiddle. To either side of the road, the woods loomed dark and dangerous. But Roger knew Corlings hunted men above all other creatures. They would stalk the road. The woods were their best hope to find a hiding place or a secluded spot to prepare a circle.
How? You never bothered to learn.
He moved back to Leisha, kneeling gently by her side.
Leisha, we need to get off the road. Leisha, we need to find a place to hide. Leisha, the sun is setting.
Leisha raised wide, frightened eyes. She looked at his concerned, bruised face, and her face screwed up as her crying resumed.
Leisha, you need to get a hold of yourself. If we don't find a place to hide soon, the sun is going to find us scattered all over the road.
What are we gonna do?
Again, Roger called upon the image of Marco Rover, and this time it came readily.
First, we're going to get off the road.
Leisha nodded and let him help her stand. With Roger supporting Leisha, they stumbled off the road and into the woods. The remaining light dropped dramatically under the forest canopy. The place smelled sickly sweet with rotting vegetation. Roger hated the woods. He scoured his mind for the tales of people who had survived the naked night, sifting for words with a ring of truth, searching for something, anything, that could help them. Caves were best, the tales all agreed. Corlings preferred to hunt in the open, and a cave, with even simple wards across the front, was safer than attempting to hide. Roger could recall at least three consecutive wards from his circle, perhaps enough to ward a cave mouth. But Roger knew of no caves nearby and had no idea what to look for. He cast about helplessly and caught the sound of running water. Immediately, he pulled Leisha in that direction. Corlings tracked by sight, sound, and smell. Barring true sucker, the best way to avoid them was to mask those things. Perhaps they could dig into the mud on the water's bank. But when he found the source of the sound, it was only a trickling stream with no bank to speak of. He turned back to find Leisha squatting in the ankle-deep water, scooping up handfuls and splashing herself, her face, her breasts, between her legs.
Leisha, we have to go.
Roger reached out to take her arm.
No!
Leisha, we don't have time for this!
He grabbed her and yanked her to her feet. He dragged her back into the woods, having no idea what he was looking for. Finally, he gave up, spotting a small clearing. There was nowhere to hide, so their only hope was to ward a circle. He let Leisha go and moved quickly into the clearing, brushing away a bed of rotting leaves to find the soft, moist soil beneath. Leisha's blurry eyes slowly came into focus as she watched Roger scraping leaves from the forest floor. She leaned heavily on a tree, her legs still weak. Only minutes ago, she had thought that she would never recover from her ordeal, but the Corlings about to rise were too immediate a threat, and she found, almost gratefully, that they took her mind away from what had happened. Her pale cheeks were smudged with dirt and streaked with tears. She tried to smooth her torn dress to regain some sense of dignity, but the ache between her legs was a constant reminder that her dignity was scarred forever.
It's almost dark. What are we gonna do?
I'll draw a circle in the soil. It'll be all right. I'll make everything all right.
Do you even know how?
Sure, I guess. I had that portable one for years. I remember the symbols.
Roger picked up a stick and started to scratch lines on the ground, glancing up to the darkening sky again and again as he worked. He was being brave for her. Leisha looked at Roger and felt a stab of guilt for getting him into this. He claimed to be 20, but she knew that for a lie with years to spare. She should never have brought him along on such a dangerous journey. He looked much like he had the first time she had seen him, his face puffy and bruised, blood oozing from his nose and mouth. He wiped at it with his sleeve and pretended it did not affect him. Leisha saw through the act easily, knew he was as frantic as she. But his effort was comforting, nonetheless.
I don't think you're doing it right.
It'll be fine.
I'm sure the Corallins will love it, since it won't hinder them in the least. We could climb a tree.
Corallins can climb better than we can.
What about finding some place to hide?
We looked as long as we could. We barely have time to make the circle, but it should keep us safe.
I doubt it.
If only I had my fiddle.
Not that pile of dung again. It's one thing to brag to the stripers in the light of day that you can charm demons with your fiddle. But what do you gain in carrying a lie to your grave?
I'm not lying!
Have it your way.
It will be all right.
Creator, can't you stop lying even for a moment? It's not gonna be all right, and you know it. Coralins aren't bandits, Roger. They won't be satisfied with just...
Roger's face screwed up in pain, and Leisha knew she had been too harsh. She wanted to lash out at something, and it was easy to blame Roger and his inflated promises for what happened. But in her heart, she knew it was more her fault than his. He left Angiers for her. She looked at the darkening sky and wondered if she would have time to apologize before they were torn to pieces. Movement in the trees and scrub behind them sent them both whirling around in fear. A man, swathed in gray robes, stepped into the clearing. His face was hidden in the shadows of his hood, and though he carried no weapons, Leisha could tell from his bearing that he was dangerous. If Merrick was a wolf, this man was a lion. She steeled herself, ravishment fresh in her mind, and honestly wondered for a moment which would be worse, another rape or the demon. Roger was up in an instant, grabbing her arm and thrusting her behind him. He brandished the stick before him like a spear, his face twisted in a snarl. The man ignored them both, moving over to inspect Roger's circle.
You have holes in your net. There, there, and there. And this...
The man kicked the ground by one of the crude symbols.
This isn't even a ward.
Can you fix it?
We shall know.
There's no time.
The man pointed to the corallings already beginning to rise at the edge of the clearing.
Oh no.
The first to solidify was a wind demon. It crouched as if to spring, but the man gave it no time. As Leisha watched in amazement, he leapt right at the corling, grabbing its arms to prevent it from spreading its wings. The demon's flesh hissed and smoked at its touch. The man snapped his head back, flipping off his hood, then drove forward, slamming the top of his bald head into the corling's snout. The man stiffened his fingers, driving them into the corling's throat. The man turned sharply, wiping the ichor from his fingers as he strode past Roger and Leisha. She could see his face now, though there was little human about it. His head was completely shaved, even his eyebrows, and in place of the lost hair were tattoos. They circled his eyes and rested on top of his head, lined his ears and covered his cheeks, even running along his jaw and around his lips.
My camp is near. Come with me if you want to see the dawn.
What about the demons?
As if to accentuate her point, a pair of wood demons, knobbly and bark-like, rose up to block their path. The man pulled off his robe, stripping down to a loincloth, and Leisha saw that the tattoos were not limited to his head. Wards ran along his rippling arms and legs in intricate patterns, with larger ones on his elbows and knees. A circle of protection covered his back, and another large tattoo stood at the center of his muscular chest. Every inch of him was warded.
The warded man.
I'll handle the demons.
He handed Leisha his robe.
Here, take this.
He sprinted at the corling, tumbling into a somersault, and uncoiling to strike both demons in the chest with his heel. The race through the trees was a blur. The warded man set a brutal pace, unhindered by the corlings that leapt at them from all sides. A wood demon sprang at Leisha from the trees, but the man was there, driving a warded elbow into its skull with explosive force. Then the warded man was off again, picking their path through the trees. Roger helped Leisha keep up, untangling her skirts when they caught in the brush. They burst from the trees, and Leisha could see a fire across the road, the warded man's camp. Standing between them and Sucker, though, was a group of corallings, including a massive 8-foot-tall rock demon. The rock demon knocked the other corallings aside, claiming the prey for itself. The warded man showed no fear as he approached the monster. He set his feet, ready to spring when the demon attacked. But before the rock demon could strike, two massive spikes burst from its breast. The warded man struck quickly, driving his warded heel into the corling's knee and collapsing the monster to the ground. As it fell, Leisha saw a monstrous black form behind him. The beast kicked away, pulling its horns free, and then reared up, driving its hooves into the corling's back with a burst of magic. The warded man charged the remaining demons, but the corlings scattered at his approach. A flame demon spat at him, but the man held up his spread hands, and the blast became a cool breeze as it passed through his warded fingers. Shaking with fear, Roger and Leisha followed him into his camp, stepping into his circle of protection with enormous relief.
Twilight Dancer!
The great horse ceased its attack on the prone demon and galloped after them, leaping into the ring. Like its master, Twilight Dancer looked like something out of a nightmare. The stallion was enormous, bigger by far than any horse Leisha had ever seen. Its coat was thick, shining ebony, and its body was armored in warded metal. The barding about its head had been fitted with a long pair of metal horns, etched with wards, and even its black hooves had been carved with the magic symbols, painted silver. The towering beast looked more demon than horse. Hanging from its black leather saddle were various harnesses for weapons, including a yew bow and a quiver of arrows, long knives, a bola, and spears of various lengths. A polished metal shield, circular and convex, was hooked over the saddle horn, ready to be snatched up in an instant. Its rim was etched with intricate wards. Twilight Dancer stood quietly as the warded man checked it for wounds, seeming unconcerned with the demons that lurked just a few feet away. When he was assured that his mount was unharmed, the warded man turned back to Leisha and Roger, who stood nervously in the center of the circle, still reeling from the events of the last few minutes.
Stoke the fire. I've some meat we can put on and a loaf of bread.
He moved toward his supplies, rubbing at his shoulder.
You're hurt.
Leisha rushed over to inspect his wounds. There was a cut on his shoulder and another deeper gash on his thigh. His skin was hard and crisscrossed with scars, giving it a rough texture, but not unpleasant to the touch. There was a slight tingle in her fingertips as she touched him, like static from a carpet.
It's nothing. Sometimes a Corlin gets lucky, catches a talon on flesh before the wards drive it away.
He tried to pull away, reaching for his robe, but she was not to be put off.
No wound from a demon is nothing. Sit down and I'll dress these.
I have an herb pouch in that saddlebag.
Leisha opened the bag and found the pouch. She bent to the fire's light as she rooted through the contents.
I don't suppose you have any palm leaves.
Why? There's plenty of hog root.
It's nothing. I swear you messengers think that hog root is a cure for everything.
Leisha took the pouch, along with a mortar and pestle and a skin of water, and knelt beside the man, grinding the hog root and a few other herbs into a paste.
What makes you think I'm a messenger?
Who else would be out on the road alone?
I haven't been a messenger in years.
The man did not flinch at all as she cleaned out the wounds and applied the stinging paste. Roger narrowed his eyes as he watched her spread the salve on his thick muscles.
Are you an herb gatherer?
I'm Leisha, and that's Roger making supper. He's a jongleur.
The man nodded Roger's way, but like Leisha, Roger could not meet his gaze for long.
Thank you for saving our lives. Don't you have a name?
None I've used in some time.
But you do have one.
The man only shrugged.
Well then, what should we call you?
I don't see that you need to call me anything. You owe me nothing. I would have helped anyone in your position. Tomorrow, I'll see you safely to Farmer Stump.
We just left the stump. We need to get to Cutter's Hollow. Can you take us there?
No.
Going back to the stump will cost us a week at least.
That's not my problem.
We can pay.
The man glanced at her, and she looked away guiltily.
Not now, of course. We were attacked by bandits on the road. They took our horse, circle, money, even our food. They took everything. But once I get to Cutter's Hollow, I'll be able to pay.
I have no need of money.
Please, it's urgent.
I'm sorry.
It's fine, Leisha. If this cold heart won't help us, we'll find our own way.
What way is that? The way of being killed while you attempt to hold off demons with your stupid fiddle?
Roger turned away, stung. But Leisha ignored him, turning back to the man.
Please. A messenger came to Angiers 3 days ago with word of a flux that spread through the hollow. It's killed a dozen people so far, including the greatest herb gatherer that ever lived. The gatherers left in the town can't possibly treat everyone. They need my help.
So, you want me to not only put aside my own path, but to go into a village rife with flux?
My father is very sick. If I don't get there soon, he may die.
The warded man reached out tentatively and put a hand on her shoulder. Leisha was unsure of how she had reached him, but she sensed that she had.
Please,